Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio. 855 AM on your dial.
And on 3CR Digital and streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to the 284th program of Think Again, which is produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization that has been working for social change for well over 27 years. We're broadcasting from the 3CR studio on the not-ceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I'm Jacques Boulet, and Jennifer has a day off today, so today I'm talking with Mike Salvaris, director of the Australian National Development Index, and someone who was really important for Borderlands 27 years ago as we tried to establish ourselves in Camberwell. So welcome to the program, Mike.
Thanks, Jacques. It's really great to be working with you again after so long, and we did some good things together,
didn't we? We certainly did. Attempts to try and find out how well a country and its population are going or doing have a long and rather sorry pedigree. In our capitalist fantasy world, we have been in the habit of thinking that as long as our national GDP keeps going up, we're all hunky-dory, with progress all around. And if not happy with all that progress, it just may be our own fault. Or you just are a utopian dreamer of some type. However, when the Western world economist of the world or the World Bank started to apply this rather cross-eyed GDP approach to measuring progress in formerly colonized and now independent and presumably developing countries, things started to become really interesting. Indeed, first attempts to come up with a more complex set of indicators about how people or countries were going occurred from the mid to late 60s by the United Nations Research Institute in Social Development, UNRIST, located in Geneva. As the concept social development suggests, it was understood that development and progress need to include the social, cultural, and personal aspects of people's lives. So this really set off a gradual evolution of how we have tried to get a more complete understanding of how people are really going. And Mike Salvaris has been involved in that process in Australia, so again, welcome. 25 or so years ago, that was, as you mentioned before, that was our joint first attempt at starting a process to that effect, to making these indicators more meaningful. So to get us started, Mike, could you share with listeners how and why you came to be involved in the movement to develop a system of more adequate and more complete indicators for and of human well-being and national development?
Thanks, Jacques. Well, it's been a fairly long journey for me, but I suppose my starting point was always, what is human progress? What is social justice? What kind of society do we want? And I became involved originally in the Kane government in developing a social justice strategy and a set of measures for progress, I suppose mainly to as a counterweight against the weight of GDP and all of the influence that GDP has in shaping what we think progress is and good societies are, which is really economic output. Mm-hmm. when it boils down, it's not better lives or better societies, it's just how much stuff we produce and consume. So I started, and this is where I first worked with you, Jacques,
mm-hmm.
thinking about measures of progress that were different, that took into account a more holistic vision of what a good society is. Obviously, economic is part of that, but social, cultural, justice, health, and so on, environmental especially, mm-hmm. all of these things together constitute most people's idea of a good society and good progress for all, rather than mm-hmm. simply mm-hmm. an economically biased version. I think this is the lesson I learned from you, to be honest, that we're talking here about what progress is mm-hmm. and how tendentious that term can be yeah. in the hands of different people. We're talking here about progress really means movement towards a good society, I think, in your view and in mine. Mm. And if that is the case, then it opens up democratic questions also of in whose view, mm-hmm. progress for whom. And that's another part of the puzzle that didn't occur to me until further down the track in this work, that we're really talking about the definition, the contested definition of what social progress is. Mm-hmm. And we start to realise how that has been distorted in the direction of economic progress. Mm-hmm. So I became interested in both in the interaction between the democratic issues and, if you like, the more technical issues of what measurements we use. And the other logical thing in all this is, if we're going to measure something, we need to measure it against a goal or a target.
Yes.
There's no point in just having a measure that's like a snapshot. Mm-hmm. Good measurements of progress mean that you're moving towards the goal you want to achieve. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't defined the goal you want to achieve, then you can't really say you're making progress. So that's the critical issue. So we developed initially working with local communities, mm-hmm. this idea of community mm-hmm. participation and developing measures of progress for local communities. Then we went to a national scale and we've set up this ANDI, the Australian National Development Index Limited, as a not-for-profit corporation that's trying to change the way we think about progress, to engage citizens in it, to develop a better set of measures mm-hmm. that are linked to progress goals. Mm-hmm. And as we'll see in a minute, we're working in Western Australia on a sort of prototype state version of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit also the international development.
I've been lucky to be a member, to be part of that whole project that, say, the OECD, and I work with UNRISD, UNRSD, mm-hmm. But the OECD has been working on this. And I might say that Australia has had an influence. Our work and the work of the ABS and others have had an influence. So the OECD has now made this a main focus. Better measures of social progress mm-hmm. Since the year 2004. And they've also had many international conferences bringing people together, mm-hmm. not just governments, mm-hmm. but community leaders mm-hmm. and researchers and so on. It's been an exciting process. We have mm-hmm. a global conference every 2 years. We mm-hmm. had one last year in Italy. It's been a wonderful thing to be part of, but it's also such a crucial question. What kind of societies do we want? Who should say? How do we measure it? We're locked out of that debate. I feel ordinary people are locked out of that debate.
That's
because,
right.
You know, experts come in and say, you need this, you need to do this. Politicians say, well, we've only got 4 years, so we'll just sort of do programs that we've got and we'll tinker with them. No one asks the big question. Mm. And there's no way for citizens, for ordinary people to be involved in determining that question with any confidence that they'll be listened to.
So you already anticipated, in a way, the next question, which I was going to ask. Over those three decades you have been involved in, I have, with interruption, been involved in it as well. What so the public and more official responses to the proposals and efforts to get a working set of social indicators going, how has that been going for the three? You already hinted at it, really.
Look, it's not an easy or straightforward process because, for one thing, a whole set of neoliberal values and procedures and measures of progress are locked in. So countering that strong idea that's strongly built in that all we need to do is grow our economy if we're going to progress, that is a major, if you like, ideological or conceptual barrier. But there's also practical barriers because when this idea has been so powerful over so many years, it's built into the practice and the ways of thinking of people in the public sector. And, of course, business like it anyway because it's their game. Mm-hmm. If you just keep increasing the size of the economy, you don't worry about poverty and other things like that. You just say, well, they'll all fix themselves. So that's been difficult. It's also been I might say there has been significant progress because it's become self-evident now that this is the wrong way to go.
Yeah.
Inequality, environmental destruction, housing crises, Many other problems show that they stem back from this idea of GDP first, growing the economy first at all costs.
Yeah.
Don't worry about distribution or fairness. Yeah. Don't worry about the impact on the environment. The earth has got unlimited resources. We can never run out of them. So that's been difficult, but I'm sure that institutionally this has started to change.
Mm-hmm.
The OECD and the United Nations have had conferences now, and they've started to develop alternative benchmarks of progress and so on. I feel, though, that there's still so much pressure on from coming from the economic growth side of things that it's difficult to see how this is going to structurally change. That's the critical thing. Now, in terms of the public themselves, I think people understand these arguments. Whenever we do research as to what people think progress is, what is a good society, how much emphasis we should give to growing wealth as opposed to fairer conditions, better lives for everyone, better environment and so on, most people agree. So there's an untapped resource there, but it's being suppressed because we're not educating people. We're not able to. The conventional education and the media keep stressing economic growth all the time.
Yes, that's right.
So the alternative argument, which is a very powerful and a very ethical argument, is not being put. That's the tragedy. But I think that's changing too. We're going to be developing in Western Australia a project which has a major community input into it.
And you will be talking more about that.
And so I think that's part of the answer, trying to change the way governments work. I mean, some governments have adopted wellbeing frameworks, but they're not being used.
That's right.
You know, we've got a measuring what matters now, a federal framework that I don't think has been fully applied in the way that governments actually work. It's one thing to have a set of measures there that are nice to refer to when you want to. But if they are valid measures and the aim is to build them into the way we think about progress and the way policies are developed and the priorities we give in spending government money.
That's right. Exactly. Totally. And the only thing we really, particularly now over the last couple of years, have been hearing is about interest rates and about
exactly, and cost of living and so on.
All of that, yeah.
And you know, maintaining economic growth and all of those things. Now, no one says they aren't important, but the more important question is the kind of society we want
have. That's right. Yeah, inequality.
And
as you said.
Working back from a clear definition of what that means, which is why good benchmarks set targets and define in a concrete way what that society looks like in a democratic way that everyone can have access to and understand, rather than say, well, you don't know, you're not an expert, you're just an ordinary person, what would you know about globalization and economic growth? And and you and I know that that has been captured and people have been bullied out of having their own views and letting those views prevail as they should in a democrat, in a social democracy. That should be happening, but we don't have the democratic means for doing that.
That's correct.
And we don't have sufficient levels of awareness, mostly because it is suppressed, I think, not because people don't want to have it.
No, that, I agree. And we, meanwhile, also look how our educational standards are going down the drain.
Well,
and,
they've been corporatized.
All the figures are really not so positive, really.
They are. And they've been monetized and corporatized to the extent where larger questions of the quality of life and decency and social justice and human rights and so on are secondary to instrumental questions of how do we turn education into making money.
That's right. And we have been having lots of, probably altogether 15 or 16 programs where we also criticise the way in which our democratic system does not work.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
So and it's declining, and trust and confidence is declining.
Absolutely.
And ideas about new ideas, if you regard democracy as you and I do, as a dynamic institution,
that
should change and should be inclusive.
Yep.
We haven't had any innovations. We haven't had anything to make people feel, I am part of this. I'm involved in this.
Yep. You see the way in which two-party system absorbs all attention as to who are we going to get not so much the best guy, but the least bad guy.
And look at the election that's coming. It's going to be an instrumental, low-key election between two major monolithic power blocks.
Yep.
It's not about what kind of Australia we want.
No,
where do you get to say that totally, in the election totally. Process?
They mention it all the time, but it has nothing to do with it. So no. Let's move to the present initiative.
Yes.
You have co-instigated, and that is the proposal to start a 5-year community-based process in West Australia to develop a strategy of building well-being into government and community. I love that. Building well-being into a government and community. What's the purpose, going a bit beyond this good-sounding title?
Well, when you think about it, well-being is the function of government. The well-being of the people is the main function of government. It's not creating wealth or an economy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Western Australia we chose partly because of accident or circumstance, mm-hmm. if you like.
Mm-hmm.
When we were working Andy up as a national project, it also became clear that state governments need a similar sort of process,
mm-hmm.
that the idea of having a well-being framework and well-being goals and community engagement is just as valid at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
And by happenstance, Fiona Stanley, who's wonderful Australian of the Year and has a lot of profile and influence in WA, mm-hmm. became our champion in Western Australia. And we were asked about 4 or 5 years ago to develop or to advise them on developing a wellbeing framework for the state. We were funded to do a five-year plan, which we did. The state government has indicated that it's interested in that project.
Mm-hmm.
At that stage, we didn't have full government support. We think we do have that now, and Roger Cook, the Premier, has been elected with a very strong majority.
Mm-hmm.
This project was designed to bring together all that we know and have learnt about well-being measurement, about the democratic issues, about the best kind of framework, about how you build it into government and budgets,
mm-hmm.
and how you change the basic paradigm of government.
Mm-hmm.
Government's role should be to promote the well-being of people and mm-hmm. to include people in that
mm-hmm.
right across the board, rather than simply being a handmaiden to mm-hmm. economic growth,
mm-hmm.
providing all of the conditions for a stronger private economy.
That's right.
Which seems ludicrous. I mean, going back to Aristotle,
mm-hmm.
government is about the well-being of people. Mm-hmm. So we designed this project to have, if you like, three-part ownership between the community, the research sector and the government. There's a very strong 2 to 3 year community engagement program in which, through a variety of ways, platforms that are inclusive, we're asking people all over the state, at least 100,000 people we're aiming to directly tap into,
mm-hmm.
to get their views about what kind of WA they want, mm-hmm. what are the key goals and what are the measures that we need to achieve success. And in doing that, we are drawing on the work of the OECD and of many pioneer countries, from Bhutan to Canada to New Zealand, which we've worked with those companies, Our project has been an advisor to all of those countries and to many others. And so what we're trying to do is put into practice the best way of engaging the community in ways that are not patronising, in ways that are accessible and that are different for different people, to get them all talking about this question.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of state do we want? What does it look like?
Mm-hmm.
How do we define it concretely, not in vague generalisations that politicians use all the time, like, you know, a better society or fairness for all? Or these are just, you know, airy-fairy terms.
Mm-hmm.
We have to, in the end...
Mm-hmm.
If we don't define the future, someone said, it will define us.
Mm,
and I totally agree with that.
Yep.
That we have to have a clear idea and a concrete idea of what we want to achieve as a society and what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And the next step is, and we have to involve people in a democracy,
mm-hmm.
we have to involve people in that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be able to define it and measure it and build it into government.
That's
and there are
right.
many ways to build it into government, which are not being adopted now. Mm. They include things like budgets.
Yep.
But
yep.
the example of Wales, which produced, when it became independent, did this thing from scratch. What kind of Wales do we want? How do we involve the people?
Yes.
And then set up legislation, which effectively says, this is our plan as a nation. These are our goals. This is what well-being means in Wales. You, in every department of government, you have to show how you're advancing those goals. You have to give an annual report. You have to, and there's a commissioner appointed whose job is to look out for future the well-being of future generations. And that act is the sort of thing we need.
Dear listeners, you're listening to Think Again on 3CR, Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial, and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Today, Mike Silvares and I have a conversation about the need to develop a more comprehensive set of indicators about how our country is progressing or not progressing. So, Mike, you just before that little interruption, you mentioned that the indicator project in West Australia will entail a more bottom-up process lasting 5 years. How is that concretely planned to happen? You know that Borderlands is quite interested in community development processes and such more. So how do you and Fiona Stanley imagine that to happen?
It's got to be done over time. Because too much community consultation is just rush and grab consultation where community is told to have an opinion on something and they never hear back. So our experience, and I think yours would support this, is that you must plan firstly for inclusiveness, and that means that you must have different ways of talking to people and letting them have an input, whether that's through local focus groups, through the help of local government, through video and film, through school projects, through surveys, all of that sort of thing, through social media. So we're putting all of that together. And we're also doing it in phases. And I learned that lesson from working with the Canadian Index of Wellbeing, who had a community engagement process in the community that went over 5 years. And while we're not going to take the full 5 years on the community engagement, we're certainly taking about 2 to 3 and trying to draw on that experience. And that experience is that you have to start off where people are. And if you're raising a question as large as the question of what kind of community or society do we want, you can't expect people to immediately be able to sort of go into PhD mode and write you a thesis, ordinary people. On the other hand, you must not discount the fact that people have views and that they need to be partly informed and educated and helped and so on in the way they're produced. So you've got to produce material that is getting them started on that. You've got to give them options and so on. You can't. You also are dealing in a climate of distrust. Anything that looks political, don't want to know about it. Surveys, don't want to know about it. You're probably selling soap. But we're not selling soap. We're selling a better future, we hope. So we plan to do this over 2 to 3 years. We plan to use all these different forms of involvement and engagement. We've got strong partnerships with the Council of Social Service, a local government association, key NGOs, and so on. And so we're trying to bring together a united front that says, look, we're going to go out into the West Australian community at many different levels. We're going to involve this. People are going to trust this process because we're going to make sure that it's trustworthy, and we're going to resource it properly. So we're actually putting together a program that would cost something like, I don't know, $5 million, which would make it much larger than any community engagement program that I've been working in I'm aware of. But that's only simple arithmetic, Chuck. It's because, as you and I know, engaging the community authentically and accessibly is expensive.
And it requires resources.
But it's not expensive at all compared to some of the things that governments spend money on. You might start off with AUKUS submarines at the high level. But coming down to things that governments routinely spend on in social policy, the amount that is actually committed to genuine community engagement is minuscule.
Or consultants who basically export the money outside.
So we spent a long time, and we had a grant from the Lord Mayor's Charitable Foundation, by the way, here in Melbourne, to devise the ideal community engagement program from our best practice knowledge. and given the time and the resources that we thought necessary. So that's what we're doing in WA. So it's an experiment, but a very exciting one if you've worked in this field.
We're slowly reaching the end of our conversation.
Unfortunately, it feels like we just got started.
That's right. So looking ahead now and looking at other actors, not just the community in that proposed process, especially, I mean, governments. Could you elaborate a bit what the uses for policy making and program development in West Australia could be and how these things go? What could be in the way of it becoming a success? Just in a couple of minutes, which we're left with.
Well, we've already elucidated some of the obstacles, and that's the way of thinking. In Western Australia, the influence of economic views about mining and so on, you know, not rocking the boat with the GDP, obviously, governments that are not prepared to take risks and so on, that's common to all states. So there are obstacles, but there are many ways in which if government really accepted this idea, and it is wholly legitimate from a democratic perspective. If they did, there are many ways, and the OECD has produced a series of guidances as to the different ways in which you build well-being in, starting off with having a community engagement process to determine what well-being is, setting up frameworks and benchmarks which are to guide policy and planning, being the operative term there, legislation such as the Wales legislation, which requires government to operate in a well-being-centred way in all things and to use these principles and goals of well-being. And when I say well-being, by the way, I'm talking about equitable, sustainable well-being, not well-being in the sense of, you know, eating well and wearing lycra and doing lots of cycling. I mean well-being in its broader sense, the well-being of people, their development, the environment, and so on, because the environment is part of well-being, and the well-being of the environment is critical. So there are many ways of doing it. There are many opportunities, and we've got in the WA process, we've built this in, many opportunities to learn from the best practice countries. And there's now 10 countries that are doing things differently or starting to do things differently and structurally, structurally changing the way they do government, the way they consult with people, the way they plan budgets, and the way they report.
I certainly hope that the Victorian government is listening to our program. I'm not sure about that, but we probably will make them listen.
Well, I hope so too.
Yes, because we did have, 30 years ago, we had that attempt, 27 years ago.
Yes.
Through Vegas, I was involved in that as well.
We did. And you were. And, and we'd hoped then that they would start something. Yeah. Well, it kind of went into the back burner a bit.
Yes, also because
but it'll come back.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mike, for coming in and to share both the studio. It was lovely to see you again. And for listeners who are interested in this, we will be putting links and references on the program website. A little bit of a community announcement on behalf of Borderlands. We will be restarting our evening programs Thursdays, and I will put more information about that on the website as well. And we are planning the first community development conference in October, a Victorian-based conference, the 16th, 17th, and 18th of October. And again, about that, also more information forthcoming. Thanks for listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio. If you want to send us any comments about today's program, you can email borders@borderlands.org.au. And remember, our past programs are all available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. And to finish our program, please enjoy Milky Mana by King Stingray.
by the fire. Man, I got no reason to rise.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.